We are beginning part one of Into Zake, Shangay, Sassafras, Cypress, and Indigo, which is the story of three sisters and their mother from Charleston, South Carolina. Sassafras, the oldest, a poet and weaver like her mother. She's gone to live, going off to college to live with other artists in Los Angeles. She's trying to weave her life out. You have Cypress, the dancer, and then Indigo, the youngest, who's still a child of Charleston, too much south of her, who lives in poetry. So this is part one, and we'll sort of work our way through it over the next few episodes. Where there is a woman, there is magic. If there is a moon falling from her mouth, she is a woman who knows her magic, who can share or not share her powers. A woman with a moon falling from her mouth, roses between her legs, and tiaras of Spanish moss, this woman is a consort of the spirits. Indigo seldom spoke. There was a moon in her mouth. Having a moon in her mouth kept her laughing. Whenever her mother tried to pull the moss off her head or clip the roses round her thighs, Indigo was laughing. "Mama, if you'll pull them off, they'll just grow back. It's my blood. I got earth blood filled up with the Geechies long gone in the sea." Sitting among her dolls, Indigo looked quite mad. As a child, she stuffed socks with red beans, raw rice, sawdust, or palm leaves. Tied ribbons made necks so they could have heads and torsos. Then eyes from carefully chosen buttons or threads. Hair from yarn specially dyed by her sisters and her mama. Dresses of the finest silk patches, linen shoes, and cotton underskirts, satin mitts or gloves, and brought up with the delight of a child's hand. These creatures were still her companions, keeping pace with her changes, her moods and dreams as no one else could. Indigo heard them talking to her in her sleep. Sometimes when someone else was talking, Indigo excused herself. Her dolls were calling for her. There was so much to do. Black people needed so many things. That's why Indigo didn't tell her mama what all she discussed with her friends. It had nothing to do with Jesus, nothing at all. Even her mama knew that. And she would shake her head the way folks do when they hear bad news, murmuring, "Something's got hold to my child. I swear, she's got too much South in her." The South in her, the land and salt winds moved her through Charleston streets as if she were a mobile sapling with the gait of a well-loved colored woman whose lover was on the horizon in any direction. Indigo imagined tough winding branches growing from her braids, deep green leaves rustling by her ears, doves and macaws flirting above the nest they fashioned in the secret, protected niches way high up in her headdress. When she wore this Carolinian costume, she knew the cobblestone streets were really polished oyster shells covered with pine needles and cotton flowers. She made herself her world from all that she came from. She looked around her at the wharf. If there was nobody there but white folks, she made them black folks. In the grocery, if the white folks were buying up all the fresh collards and okra, she made them disappear and put the produce on the vegetable wagons that went round to the colored. There wasn't enough for Indigo in the world she'd be born to, so she made up what she needed, what she thought the black people needed. Access to the moon, the power to heal, daily visits with the spirits. Moon journeys, cartography by Indigo. Find an oval stone that's very smooth. Wash it in rose water 2 times. Lay it out to dry in the night air where no one goes. When dry, hold stone tightly in the right hand. Caress entire face with the left hand. Repeat the same action with the stone in the left hand. Without halting the movement, clasp left stone-filled hand with the right. Walk to a tree that houses a spirit friend. Sit under the tree facing the direction of your mother's birthplace. Hold your hands between your bosom tight. Take 5 quick breaths and 3 slow ones. Close your eyes. You're on your way. Alternative modes of moon journeys. In a thoroughly clean bathroom with the window open, burn magnolia incense, preferably, but cinnamon will do. In a handkerchief handled by some other woman in your family, the further back the better, put chamomile, an undamaged birthwort leaf, and lady's fern. Tie this with a ribbon from your own hair. Kiss the sachet 3 times. Drop it gently in a tub of warm water that will cover all your body. Place 2 white burning candles at either end of the tub. Float 1 fully open flower in the water. Get in the tub while tickling the water in circles with the petals of the flower. Lie in the tub with flower over your heart. close your eyes, you are on your way. Not all black people wanted to go to the moon, but some did. Aunt Haiti had gone to the moon a lot. She had told Indigo about the marvelous parties there were in the very spots where white people put flags and jumped up and down erratically. They never did learn how to dance. Been around black folks all these years and still don't have sense enough to keep in rhythm. But there they were walking on the moon like nothing ever went on up there. Like women didn't sidle up to lunar hills every month. Like seas and menses could be held back by a rocket launcher. Like the colored might disappear with the light of the moon. We ain't going anywhere, are we? Indigo sat some of the dolls on the inside of her thigh. Her very favorite she sat in her lap. Indigo had made every kind of friend she wanted. African dolls filled with cotton root bark so they'd have no more slave children. Jamaican dolls in red turbans, bodies formed with comfrey leaves because they had had to work on Caribbean and American plantations and their bodies must ache and be sore. Then there were the mammy dolls that Indigo labored over for months. They were almost 4 feet high with big gold earrings made from dried sunflowers and tits of uncleaned cotton. They smelled of fennel, peach leaves, wild ginger, wild yams. She still crawled up onto their arms when she was unavoidably lonely, anxious that no living black folks would talk to her the way her dolls and Aunt Haiti had. Everybody said she was just too ornery to hold a decent conversation, but that wasn't true. What was true was that Indigo had always had to fight Cypress and Sassafras just to get them to listen to her. They thought they were so grown, so filled up with white folks' ways, they didn't want to hear about the things Aunt Haiti knew. Indigo watched her mother over huge vats of dyes, carrying newly spun yarn from the pots to the lines and back again. Sassafras throwing shuttles back and forth and back and forth. Cypress tying off cloth, carrying the cloth to the stairway where she began the abacus the family was famous for. There was too much back and forth going on for anybody to engage little Indigo in conversations about the haints and the colored. If the rhythm was interrupted, Sassafras would just stare at the loom, Cypress would just look at her work and not know where to start or what gauge her stitches were. Mama would burn herself with some peculiarly tinted boiling water. Everybody would be mad and not working, so Indigo was sent to talk to her dolls. All the dolls in the house became hers, and the world Sassafras wandered in her weaving, and those Cypress conjured through her body were lost to Indigo, who handed three-way conversations with her cloth companions all alone. A girl child with her dolls is unlikely to arouse attention anywhere, same as little boys with footballs or Davy Crockett hats. So Indigo would sneak from place to place she'd been, put the corridor back around the porch, and take her friends out visiting. Old ladies loved for Indigo and company to pass by. They would give her some homemade butter cookies or gingerbread. They offered teas and chocolates as well as scriptures and the legends of their lives. Indigo had only had colored dolls and only visited colored ladies. She didn't like Miss Ficka, who fawned over Cypress and Sassafras like they were most white. No, Miss Yancey with the low secret voice and 17 million hundred braids was Indigo's friend. And Sister Mary Louise, who kept a garden of rose bushes and herbs, was Indigo's cut buddy down to the colored Methodist Episcopal Church. Streets in Charleston wind the way old ladies' fingers crochet as they unravel the memories of their girlhoods. One thing about a Charlestonian female is her way with little things. The delicacy of her manner, the force of ritual in her daily undertakings. So what is most ordinary is made extraordinary. What is hard seems simple. Indigo listened to their tales, the short and long ones, with a mind to make herself a doll whose story that was or who could have helped out. When her father died, Indigo had decided it was the spirit of things that mattered. The humans come and go. Aunt Haiti said spirits couldn't be gone or the planet would fall apart. The South in her. Rumor was that Miss Yancey had a way with white folks. They couldn't deny her anything. That's what folks said. That she must honey up to them, leastways smile a lot. That was the only way the beautiful things she had in her house could be accounted for. Miss Yancey couldn't have bought such lace or that silver tea service. Imagine a colored woman having an afternoon tea and crumpets with all that silver. Indigo always carried her doll friend Miranda over to Miss Yancey's. Miranda had better manners than some of her other dolls. Miranda was always clean, too, in a red pelsey pinafore and small black sandals. Indigo let Miranda use her parasol to protect her from the sun. What proper young woman would come visiting faint and perspiring? Only some of Indigo's more country dolls would have marched to Miss Yancey's with the outdoors all over them. Indigo walked up to Miss Yancey's front porch, pulled her slip up, and fussed with the hair sticking out of her braids. She rinsed her hands off, but redoing her hair for a short chat seemed to make too much of a regular outing. Besides, Miranda was really dressed up. Indigo had decorated her bonnet with dandelions and sprayed some of Mama's perfume under her arms and behind her knees. When she was ready, Indigo rang the bell and waited. Sure enough, Miss Yancey was coming to the door. She wore slippers with the heels all beat down that made a sound like Bill Bojangles when he did the soft shoe. Opening the bright white door while pulling the apron from around her neck, Miss Yancey bent down to kiss Indigo on the cheek. "Now ain't you looking mighty fresh today, Indigo? And Miranda must be going to a social, all decked out, huh?"
"No, ma'am. We just thought you might want some company. I was talking to Miranda and she told me you were thinking on us real hard."
"Y'all come in and make yourselves at ease in the parlor. Miranda must got a second sense. She always knows when I want to see my little girls." Miss Yancey's house smelled like collard greens and cornbread, even when she fried okras and made red sauce. Indigo nudged Miranda. "Can you smell that? Miss Yancey's house smells good, doesn't it?" Her house felt good, too. There were so many soft places to sit and smell other things. Miss Yancey liked to make pillows. Oval pillows, square pillows, rectangles, triangles, shapes that had no names but were scented, soft, huggable pillows. These pillows were covered with black satins and silks and embroidered in blinding scarlets and golds and set off with laces, tassels, and cut cords. Miss Yancey told Miranda that she made the pillows now because all her life she had been living between a rock and a hard place. Even though she didn't really need any more, something called her to keep sewing herself comforts. Miranda asked Miss Yancey the questions that Indigo considered too forward. Why, one time when Miranda and Indigo were having a bit of pineapple upside down cake with her tea, and Miss Yancey was talking about how the white folks drove the colored to drink in evil ways, drove decent young gals into lives of sin, chasing them up and down the back stairwells from Allendale to Hilton Head, Miranda blurted out, "Well, how come the white people give you so many things? If they so hard-hearted and low down, why you smile up to them?" Indigo was embarrassed and gave Miranda a good whack across the face. "She didn't mean that, ma'am." "Yes, she did, Indigo. She did. And it ain't correct to be slapping on no free somebody. You keep your hands to yourself and listen to what I gotta say." Indigo settled back into the love seat, almost disappearing in all the pillows. Miranda finally relaxed and lay next to her listening. "Folks in these parts got such a low idea of the women of the race. They can't imagine how I come by what I come by lest they weigh my reputation down with filthy, dirty, filthy minds." "Oh, no, ma'am. Didn't nobody say you did it that?" Indigo shot up out the pillows, dragging Miranda with her to Miss Yancey's lap. "That's not what I mean, sweetheart. Those be shooting words. I would suggest that whoever be announcing that I grin up in faces of these folks is out of their minds. All I do is go round the house that I be cleaning, waxing, dusting, ironing, sweeping, my regular chores. And if I come across something that I got a yearn for, I say to the miss, I sure do like that. Then I stare at her. But with my eyes a little bit going down in a crooked direction, I look at what it was I wanted and back at the white lady. I tell my soul to get all in what I want. Next thing you know, the white lady can't think of no reason why she should have whatever that is. And she turned around asking me, don't I want it? And of course I want it, because I done put all my soul in it. And I gotta have my soul in order to come on back round here to my house." Indigo and Miranda thought about what Miss Yancey had said for days, but not nearly so much as they did about Miss Yancey and Mr. Henderson, also known as Uncle John the Junk Man. He was looking bad most of the time. Indigo figured that before she was born, Uncle John would have been called all fine-looking man. Miss Yancey found no fault with that. Yet every time Uncle John would come round in his horse and wagon with things everybody didn't want, Miss Yancey would shudder like the ugliness of what all he charted startled her. She'd purse her lips, put out her hands on her hips, whisper that cursing Indigo had told Miranda about, or she would throw open her screen door and shout, "John Henderson, get that nasty mess out my face. Get on away from my door with your trash, you hear me?" Then she'd slam the door shut, brush her hands on her apron, and pat her braids as if she was making sure that nothing about her was out of order as everything about Uncle John. Still, one day, after she had shouted the daylights out the window for Uncle John to go on wherever it was that he laid his pitiful head, he came creeping up the steps. Miranda and Indigo peeped out the window, being careful to stay behind the curtains. Uncle John was a slight man, colored, copper-colored. Indigo explained to Miranda that was the Indian in him. He had a sly look like the eyes of the boys who came tearing at the cypress after school.
giggling eyes and a mouth fitting a proud man. Miss Yancey looked like more like Sister Mary Louise to Indigo. Here she was, prancing around, twitching, putting her hair this way and that because Uncle John was at the door. That didn't make no sense. No sense at all. Uncle John had to push the bell 3 times. Finally, Miss Yancey slowly opened the wood door, leaving the screen door quite shut. "Well, John Henderson, what are you doing on my front porch looking how you look?" She was right. Uncle John was a mite unkept. White fuzzies curled from his ear beneath his chin. His jacket was fraying at the lapels and his shoes were covered with dirt. Miss Yancey hoped it was dirt anyway. Uncle John, on the other hand, didn't pay no mind to Miss Yancey. He just stood looking at her with those giggling eyes and said, "I've been passing by here more frequent than I used to, ma'am. I'm not a young man no more, and I've been thinking how you collect nice things just like I do, and how you're still too smart to stay off by yourself all the time. I'm fixing to come calling in the near future, if you don't mind." "John Henderson, you don't even have a place to live. You don't take baths or shades, and you think you're going to grace my house with your I don't care about nothing self? You don't even have a place to live." "I'll just pass round dinner time, aight?" That's all he said, though he was grinning even as he patted his horse, Yoki. He must have been saying sweet things because Yoki neighed, seemed to blush, and then they were gone. Miranda had not said much about Miss Yancey and Uncle John, but Indigo figured that the way Miss Yancey carried on after he left, that she set more store about him than she let on. That's why Indigo stole out of her mother's house quickly after their dinner of okra, rice, and ham hocks to see if Uncle John really came back like he said he would. She carried Marie Helene with her along with Miranda because Marie Helene was so frail that she didn't get out much. Indigo was really glad both her doll friends were with her. Otherwise, she never had believed what she saw. Uncle John was there all right, going up Miss Yancey's walk like he would have to, but he was in a tuxedo and top hat. The spats on his shoes gleamed in the lavender sky. He kept his pace up and looked at his back straight with the help of an ebony cane with a gold handle. Plus, when Miss Yancey came to the door, her hair wasn't in braids. It was all over the place like those women in the pictures of over bars, the mermaids covering their privates with their hair flowing like seaweed everywhere. She wasn't wearing her slippers either. She had on high heels and a pale blue dress chiseled onto her form like white on rice. Miss Yancey took Uncle John's arm. They virtually floated off the porch down the walk to the corner. Indigo kept hearing Miss Yancey say, "Uncle John, you don't even have a place to live." Everybody knew Uncle John lived in his wagon, but nobody had ever seen what Indigo saw. Uncle John went over to his wagon, pulled out a fine easy chair, and set it by the curb, then motioned for Miss Yancey to have a seat. Next thing Indigo knew, he had spread a Persian rug in the middle of the street, set a formal table, pulled out a wine bucket, and started dinner on the stove at the back of his wagon. Yoki was all dressed up with flowers woven through her mane and violet feathers tied on her hooves. Uncle John put candles on the table and pinned a corsage to Miss Yancey's dress. She kept looking around like she thought being in the middle of the street in Uncle John's living room was not really safe, when out of nowhere the guys from the Geechee Captains and motorcycle gang of disrepute led by a pretty man came speeding down the street. Miss Yancey most jumped to her roof. Uncle John didn't exhibit much concern about these young roofins on their huffing, humming bikes. He looked up, waved his hand, and the Geechee Captains, who had never done a good turn by anybody in the city of Charleston, South Carolina, made roadblocks on either side of Uncle John's parlor in the middle of the street. Mary Helene told Indigo she thought she would faint. Miranda was speechless. Indigo tried to accept the Geechee Captains, clad in leather jackets with cross switchblades, painted on their backs, pork pie hats, and black boots, guarding her friend Miss Yancey, who was having dinner with Uncle John, the junk man, in the street. Indigo stayed behind the bushes by the Johnson's house as long as she could, looking. When Uncle John pulled out a Victrola, played a Fletcher Henderson 78, and asked Miss Yancey to dance, Indigo knew it was time to go home. There was too much magic out in the night. Indigo felt the moon in her mouth singing the south in her. Suitors with the moons. Fill a glass that sparkles in sunlight with pure spring water. Place one sprig of fresh mint in the water and a mouthful of honey. Take your middle finger gently round the curve of your lips as you imagine your beloved might. Kiss the edges of the finger. Take a breath so deep your groin senses it. Hold your breath while envisioning your beloved's face. Release the breath still picturing your beloved. Then, with the kiss finger, make a circle round the rim of the glass 12 times, each repeating your beloved's name, each time seeing your beloved filled with joy. Close your eyes. Let your beloved fill your heart. Bring the glass to your lips. Drink the gladness that shall be yours. If your beloved has eyes for another, Sleep on your left side with 6 white roses by your head. Fill your pillow with 2 handfuls of demania leaves. Do this 3 days in a row. On the 4th day, use 1 handful of the demania leaves to make tea. Drink 2 cups, one at dawn, the other at dusk. The other handful of demania leaves should be mixed with sherbet berries, wrapped in a red or blue piece of cotton. Use red if you have passions for your beloved. Use blue if you merely desire fidelity. With demania sherbet berry filled pouch anywhere on your person in the presence of your beloved, your way shall be had. Seeking nothing, giving thanks for lunar gift. Bathe casually in a bath scented with cinnamon and vanilla. Wash hair with raspberry tea. Rinse thoroughly, being sure your hands have touched every part of your body as your blood might. Without adornment of any kind, jewelry or clothing, go to the outside, lie fully open to the sky, wildly naked. Think of your beloved, smell your beloved, allow the moon to share with you the pleasures your beloved brings you. Hold back nothing. Your thanks are mightily received, may be executed in the company of your beloved if he or she stands open over you, or if he or she lies as you lie at least 6 inches from you. Before rising, you must have surrendered all you know of your beloved to the moon, or your beloved shall have no more to offer you. Very advanced, wait if not sure. And your sons will become shepherds in the wilderness. Numbers 14:33. I think that's enough for you to meditate on tonight, Indigo. But that doesn't have anything to do with me, Sister Mary Louise. Indigo squirmed in her seat where she was helping Sister Mary Louise select the flowers for the Little Shepherd of Judea CME Church's Young People's Meeting. Don't blaspheme, Indigo. The Lord don't take kindly to senseless babbling. I'm not babbling, sister, really. I'm a girl, that's all. I want to know what I'm supposed to do. Indigo pushed the roses from the side to that, nimbly avoiding the thorns, handling buds with caring. This one will do. This one will not. Bruised flowers had no place on the altar in Christ's house. Sister Mary Louise was heartened when Indigo came around. Those other two, the one who left off to the north and the one shaking her ass all the time, they had never learned how to touch flowers or the ways of the Lord. Sister Mary Louise, with no children in her house, invited Indigo, but not Indigo's doll friends, to be among her flowers, to join in singing the praises of the Lord Almighty, whose blessings are so beautiful we can never give thanks enough, and to take breads. You can take those loaves out the oven and behave like a good Christian girl. That's what you can do. Indigo looked at the roses and then at her friend Mary Louise Murray, who must have been around roses too long. Her face shone like petals with veins glowing like the opal she wore in her ears. One big plait lay smack in the middle of her head, wound round and round. Serpents in the garden, pale green eyes rushed from her face whenever the Holy Spirit took her. If her pushes were dewy and the sun just coming up, Indigo had a reluctant soul to Sister Mary's mind. Not that Indigo was a bad child, only she had been exposed to so many heathenish folks, pagans out there on those islands. Christian girls don't do nothing but bake bread. Indigo peered into the oven. The heat beat her face till she frowned. Not ready yet, she said, and carefully let the oven door fit back in its latch. Sister Mary Louise was tickled. No, Indigo, we don't just bake bread. We tend at the beauty in the world, the flowers and the children. For all of her God-fearing ways, Sister Mary Murray had been known to get the spirits outside the church. Sometimes when she was walking to the fish market or delivering breads, she'd be singing, "I ain't got weary yet," or "Didn't my Lord deliver Daniel?" And she would just get happy in the street. This was not exemplary behavior for a deaconess. At many a sermon, she would be called forth to testify how the devil seized her in broad daylight, taking on her movements of the Holy Spirit, tempting the sin in her. Other folks believe that being without children is what drove Sister Mary to have these fits in public. It only happened when some young boy from the country was within 10 feet of her, broad-shouldered and raw. Other folks figured that Sister Mary Louise sipped a little bit and got to feeling so good she couldn't stand it. Indigo knew that Sister Mary Louise was in fact a Christian woman. Sister didn't allow any dolls that would talk in her house. "No Hanks coming in my house. What do you imagine the Lord Jesus Christ would think if I set my table for Hanks?" That's what she said to Indigo. Now, Indigo was angry. The bread wasn't ready. Sister's saying little girls make bread and take care of beauty. Indigo thought her stomach was going to jump out of her mouth and knock over all the flowers, stump the breads, and let hell loose in Sister Mary's big white kitchen where Jesus looked down from the very wall, the Last Supper, from way up on Mount Calvary where he was waiting for his sons to shepherd. Indigo was so mad she felt lightheaded, hot all over. "Sister Mary Louise, when I talked to Miranda, she didn't want to bake nothing. I told you already, you too big to be talking to dolls. Good Lord, Indigo, look at yourself. Indigo tried to focus on Sister Mary's face, but she only saw glimmering. She tried to look at herself and kept blinking her eyes, rubbing her palms over them to get some focus. She saw something spreading out in a large scarlet pool at her feet. Sister Mary jumped up and down. Indigo, the Lord's called you to be a woman. Look on high for his blessings. Look, I say, look to Jesus who has blessed you this day. Indigo fell down on her knee like Sister Mary had and listened and swayed in her growing scarlet late to the voice of this green-eyed woman singing for the heavens. Troubled in mind and made my vow and rise and shine so that Indigo would know among whom was Mary Magdalene. Speak, child. Raise your voice that the Lord may know you as the woman you are. Then Sister Mary Louise rose, her thin body coated with Indigo's blood. She gently took off Indigo's clothes, dropped them in a pail of cold water. She bathed Indigo in a hot tub filled with rose petals, white, red, and yellow, floating around a new woman. She made Indigo a garland of flowers and motioned for her to go to the backyard. There in the garden, among God's other beauties, you would spend these first hours. Eve's curse threw us out the garden. But like I told you, women tend to beauty and children. Now you can do both. Take your blessing and let your blood flow among the roses. Squat like you will when you give birth. Smile like you will when God chooses to give you a woman's pleasure. Go now, like I say. Be not afraid of your nakedness. Then Sister Mary shut the back door. Indigo sat bleeding among the roses, fragrant and filled with grace. Marvelous ministrating moments. When you first realize your blood has come, smile, an honest smile. For you are about to have an intense union with your magic. This is a private time, a special time for thinking and dreaming. Change your bed sheet to the ones that are your favorite. Sleep with the laurel leaf under your head. Take baths in wild hyssop, white water lilies. Listen for the voices of your visions. They are nearby. Let ignoring people, draining worries fall away as your body lets what she doesn't need go from her. Remember that you are a river. Your banks are red honey where the moon wanders. For distance, disturbance of the flow. Don't be angry with your body if she is not letting go of her blood. Eat strawberries. Make strawberry tea with the leaves to facilitate the flow. To increase the flow, drink squawweed tea. For soothing before your blood flows, drink some black snake root of valerian tea. For cramps, chew wild ginger. All right, we're going to stop here for now. And again, we're reading Sassafras, Cypress, and Indigo. And I love Indigo in all of her moon-filled ways with all of her special writings. This is one of my favorite books, so I'm excited to just share and go through and read with it. You are welcome to email or respond with any of your comments. One of the ways that I particularly like about this book is the way it is written. I love the language of the book, and then I also like how you get these little small, now I wouldn't say spells, but you get these little small rituals. There you go. You get these little rituals along the way and things that you can do. I love the way she brought in, you know, a lot of books you're not talking about. Women coming onto their beginning their menstrual cycles. But I like here you have this really, you know, Christian woman that only happens to have one of her fits when she sees a good looking man. But you have this Christian woman and this young girl comes onto her cycle. And while she doesn't want any haunts or spirits in her house, it's interesting that she completely tells her to get, after she washes her and she wraps her in flowers, and then she tells her to go out into the backyard naked and squat and allow her blood to drip amongst the flowers. And honey, if you don't know rituals, that's a ritual, boo. and it's funny, you know, right now we have this whole big thing where we're, you know, a lot of people are talking about spirits and rituals and the burning of sage and smudging and all these other things, and then Christianity. I find that to be really interesting because, I mean, if you know the Bible, you know that the Bible, it's full of miracles and wonders and supernatural entities and things happening. So I find it really interesting when people become so religious that they begin to judge the practices and traditions of others. As for me, I'm not a religious person at all. I'm a very spiritual person. So it's hard for me to subscribe to religious practice. I feel like religious practice tends to get wrapped up into a lot of rhetoric. And as for me, I'd rather to focus more on spirituality, to focus on God and what I feel like each of us have, who or what we identify as God and what our own individual moral characters are. For me, I'm like, yeah, I also believe in, I feel like I call it ancestral magic or ancestral spirits. I feel like ancestral magic is just tapping into the roots of whom I am as an African American woman. And I work more and more and more to get in touch with my ancestral magic, my ancestral being, just the traditions that were largely stripped from us when we came here to America, you know. So with all that being said, it's just interesting, you know. I read this post and I wish I could just call into some of the things, but it just really was like, yeah, you don't believe in rituals and stuff, but there you are breaking bread and eating the body and the bread of God, you know, in church. And I'm just like, oh yeah, you guys do that, what, first Sunday of every month? Anyway, so that's part one of Sassafras, Cypress, and Indigo. We'll pick up on the next episode with part two. Have a good day.